you on somebody else's property, it's like, yes.
You take your chairs, we'll come back into order. You want another roll call? Someone's here, no. I think everybody's present.
Yeah.
Thank you, so we're gonna start up again under old business. Item 7A, consideration and approval of a table motion from 04/22/2009 board meeting. And the reason is the payment, repayment of Wrangell and Petersburg for reimbursement of supplemental diesel fuel. May I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Lynn.
I move to adopt the table motion to approve payment to municipalities of Petersburg and Wrangell for reimbursement of supplemental diesel fuel and overtime, plus 0.068 per kilowatt hour, in the amount of $841,785.38, as presented in the diesel and overtime reimbursement memo at CEPA's April 22nd, 2019 special board meeting.
Do I have a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Trey.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this was temporarily tabled a little while ago, and just to give staff a little bit more time to vet this and make sure that we had all of our T's crossed and I's dotted, and we've completed our due diligence with both our auditing firm and legal counsel, and we determined that there's no impediment to moving forward with the motion.
Thank you, Trey. So where does this leave us in regards to the repayment or true-up, whatever you might want to call this? I know we went through the portion of time where low lake levels, it was mandatory that we get into the diesel runs, but we've kind of moved past that some with the refinishing of the lakes, and quite frankly, right now they're at, I think, comparable to the 2018 level. So this was taken up as a special consideration due to the drought at the particular time, because there was a perception of overselling out of Taiyi to the south. So this, in my mind, isn't an ongoing thing. There's something that says that at some point it terminates and we reset to zero, and I don't know when that is. So I just kind of, before we go into this process, I'd kind of know a little bit about that.
I would say with regard to the timing of the reset, that's up to board discussion on how people perceive that, because I think different communities may have a different perspective on that.
I understand.
I think our next discussion that we'll go into with the operations plan, with the revised operation plan, will hopefully give a really broad background on, you know, what we see now and what we see going forward, and that might help shape that conversation a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. I just wanted to know that at some point this discussion would be had, and I don't know when that would be. But I thought I'd bring it to light and put it in everybody's mind, and maybe when we hear the proposed draft policies, and then we make a decision at that time, or speak to it anyway. But presently, we got a motion. Yes.
I was just going to add to that a little bit. So in the near term, so what we see currently, you know, we don't anticipate the north having to burn any diesel. So it might be a moot point a little bit until the weather actually gets firmed up over the course of the next few months. I don't think we can really answer that question, whether they would have to burn diesel. Our forecasts and our plan that Robert will present here in a little while look to prevent that. But until the actuals come out, we can't really answer that question.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So the motion is on the floor. Is there anybody else? Further discussion? Yes,
Mr.
Lisa.
Chair, just something.
Your mic.
Thank you.
There you go.
If you will
permit me to take off SEPA hat and put on a community hat for just a moment. I just want to be clear that the reimbursement, very much appreciated that. I don't want to speak against that at all. Very much appreciated. However, it does not, it's not covering the full cost of what the impact was to the communities. And I think it was unintended, but we ended up, there were other costs. We ran into spending about $100,000 on additional oil running our generators, and we the cost of the overtime reimbursement is not the fully loaded rate that includes benefits and all the things that go with it. It's just the straight overtime hourly reimbursement. And so there are some things left on the table for us that we as the communities are absorbing. I assume that's the case for Petersburg as well.
That's correct.
So I just want everybody to realize that the reimbursement is extremely appreciated, but there was a cost, fairly significant cost to us that is being borne locally.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Understanding that we all wear kind of two hats while we're here, and I appreciate that too. So by approving this particular motion, it nowhere near closes the door on additional claims. Is that
completely up to the board's discretion for any reimbursement for diesel expenditures? There was a motion passed a couple of years ago that essentially delegated that decision away from staff to the board's discretion.
Okay. So what we have right now is what we have current submitted and bill to pay for, and if there's anything additional, there would have to be a claim submitted, I would imagine. That way, that would you would foresee it?
Yep.
Joel?
If you want me to weigh in on this.
I do.
Yes. This is for what was authorized, I believe, in February, is that right? And I think it was a compromised determination by the board, and in other words, that there were broader claims brought, and the board determined that it would pay a certain amount towards that, towards a particular event that occurred last year, and anything in addition would be over and above that and have to be considered on its own terms. So.
Perfect. Yeah, as long as there's an avenue. Any other discussion? Hearing none, would you please call the roll?
Hoos?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Von Bargen?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And was this a different motion? No, that's the last one, right?
Yep.
No. It shows up twice.
Yep. The ops plan, no, that's just an attachment to that motion.
Okay, all right. So we're okay with that.
There's a motion on page PDF 78 for the ops plan.
On 78?
Yep.
Okay, so I'm informed that on page 78, there is a motion, and so we'd have to make that motion to get the discussion on the table in regards to the operating plan, which is item B, 7B. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the 2019 revised SEPA operations plan as presented in the June 19th, 2020, 2019 board packet.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Trey.
So, as you guys probably noticed, this is a pretty long and detailed plan, but this is what the board asked for, is for us to bolster up the plan, put more detail in it, so we have, I'll say, a little bit firmer guidance going forward and help explain some of the nuances to the ops plan. And Robert spent a lot of time, and we went through multiple iterations of this trying to get it. So it was in a format that people could understand and apply. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Probably doesn't need much more explanation other than giving an opportunity to Robert to walk you through the plan and talk about some of these details and answer any questions you may have. I think you'll see it's a conservative plan. I think the most important thing to remember here is that if we get too conservative, then we're not going to have any sales out of Tyee. And at the end of the day, that's bad for everybody. It will result eventually in a rate increase. So you have to recognize that Tyee Reservoir doesn't hold the whole year supply for the North End. So if you're going to make sales, there is some risk involved. And you have to accept that. And we try to hedge that risk by looking at our forecasts. You know, we track NOAA and other weather sites daily, trying to, hedge that risk and make good decisions. So as we're going through this, this is real conservative. And in the future, I think after the reservoirs are restored and such a little bit, we're going to have to, I'd advise the board to take a close look on how we're doing that. If you look over the years, we've been able to give rebates, and we've been able to fund our risk accounts. And a lot of that's through sales out of Tyee. And that benefits the North and the South. So at some point, you're going to have to absorb a little bit of risk to do some sales out of it, and at the same time, trying to fit the weather projections in there so you don't run the North short. So I think that's a fundamental thing that we all have to remember. And, of course, we want to keep rates as low as we can for everybody. And we want to be able to fund our ongoing operations and our capital improvement projects, because we have a lot of capital. We've got over $500 million worth of replacement value in assets, and we don't have that much in reserves. So just something to keep in mind. That's all I'll add right now. Maybe we'll have further comments along the road.
Well, I think we'll have further conversation, and that's going to be good. But I think that the best thing right now is to go through this operation plan with the consideration that it's very conservative, and what the impacts are going to be, not on the local communities, but on CEPA as a whole, because I think we're all in this together, and we kind of found that out through some of this the process we went through trying to make sure that the power stayed on in everybody's home. So if we keep that in mind as we move forward, that it's in the best interest of all of us, I think that would be fine. So you gonna turn this over to Robert at this time?
That yes, we're sir. Do?
Robert.
All right, Chair. Thank you. I'm gonna.
Robert, you want to hit your mic there, buddy?
Yep.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go ahead and bring up a presentation. I'm hoping that everybody had a chance to read the operations plan prior to coming today, because I think it helps not having to dive as much into the details and more explain the bigger ticket items here. So I'm going to go ahead. I put together a presentation over the last couple of days, and some of this stuff is we present at every single operations plan in December. It's something that's just inherent to the operations plan and how we as an organization maximize utilization through the optimization of output. And so this is something that. Can everybody see that okay up there? Is it clear? Yes.
I think this is Robert's attempt to keep us in the dark.
Shed some light on it. All right, there we go. So, for a few of us that haven't been through this yet, I want to go through just the first section of the operations plan. This year, actually, or this time around, I put it into specific sections so that we can reference those sections if we if we're discussing operations plans. But what I want to start with is the power sales agreement, section 5, it talks about the operations plan as kind of an arm of the power sales agreement on how to execute some of the things that SEPA is tasked with to do. And so this, over the last 10 years since the 2009 power sales agreement was signed in February, and just 6 months prior to the STI was actually came online and came into commission, the intent of the power sales agreement, it had understanding and knowledge that the STI would be there, and the operations plan would be developed to help manage the lakes. And so for the last 10 years, we've been spilling. And when we spill, there's not really that much consideration to an operations plan in terms of optimizing output and efficient dispatch, because we're already spilling. So there's not real, hasn't been much concern with how we operate the units if we're already spilling the water. But in the last 2 years, we realized that that is actually of extreme importance in these drought conditions, and I hope to shed some light on possible future drought conditions, if not a possible shift in the average precipitation. But I'm going to start here with the ideal draft year. For the last 10 years, typically what we would do is in January, the lakes would be somewhere at their pretty close to full, maybe three-quarters full. And as we move through the winter months, through February, into March, and actually as we move to April, we would try and draft the lakes here, Tyee and Swan, by using the load table. And I'll get into the details on the load tables. But using the load table to draft the lakes equally until we reach the operations plan draft elevation. And the intent there is to try and maximize the amount of water that we use out of the lakes and not risk dedicated outputs to the member utilities. Once we hit that draft limit, we have all this lake available to capture inflows for the year. And we're going to go into that very, very in great detail. But right there about the April time frame, April and May for Swan and Tyee, this is kind of typical for both lakes. They're just shifted 1 month from each other based on the elevation of the temperatures. But for the fill year, once we're in April or in May for Tyee, the lakes begin to fill again. And so, again, we use balancing of lakes through our load tables and our operations plans, weekly operations plans, to fill the lakes similarly so that by the time we reach into the August-September time frame and we get into October and we're starting to make that downturn into the winter months again, we have filled lakes and they're just prior to spill. Our biggest intent here is to prevent spill at either lake. So if there's a foot of spill at Tyee, but there's 2 feet of water available to be filled at Swan, that would not be the greatest management of the lakes, because we could have move that water to Swan and capture it and not spill that energy. So looking at how we develop this, we start with what the lake levels are today, or at the date of the model creation, or when the model was ran. With that lake level, we forecast what the inflows are going to be for tomorrow, the next day, a month, 6 months, to a year. And we do that by using NOAA data. We use NINO 3.4 data, sea surface temperature data, to tell us whether or not we have an El Nino and La Nina, which I will get into on how that affects inflows. We take snow surveys into account when we develop this to figure out how much energy we have on the hill in terms of a battery in the form of snow. Then we use USGS historical data, and we also use SEPA historical data. With that, we get inflow forecasts day by day. We take those inflow forecasts and we add load forecast. So what's the loads going to look like? Because these two together are going to determine what the next leg level is going to be. So temperature forecast, on average, CEPA's loads change by 0.67% per degree day Fahrenheit. So one more degree day Fahrenheit would be that much more increased, decreased load. We also take into account scheduled maintenance. If Tahiti is going to be out of service for a certain period of time, or Swan Lake's going to have maintenance for a certain period of time, we take that into consideration on how that affects lake levels. And then we take a five-year average of the previous loads, considering any future possible loads of fish or any new loads that are on the system. Once we have a load forecast and we know the inflows, we know the lakes, and we know the next iteration of lake level. When this is done in a loop, each time it goes around, it starts building a case reservoir plot. And that's basically, how is the lake going to respond to these inputs? In this example here, you can see by going through this day by day and inputting inflow forecasts, load forecasts, going back and getting a new lake level, the model actually starts to build a curve. And most of the time we see this curve, and it looks just like those curves that I started with on that first page, where we draft the lakes all the way down to hopefully the draft limit so that we can capture all inflows. And on an average year, and most of these lakes were designed for average years, on an average inflow year, which we'll get to, is about 150 inches, the lakes will rejuvenate or refill, and then we start that cycle over again.
So, Robert?
Yes.
Before you move on, a couple of questions. One is, how do you take into consideration the different characteristics between Swan and Tahiti? Because Tahiti, of course, fills quicker, or has 2 foot of rise per inch, whereas Swan only has an inch. And the basins are much larger. And so when you talk about this balance, it's not only water, it's generation also. So how do you combine those two things?
Okay, so there's a couple factors that are similar between Tahiti and Swan Lake, and some that are completely different. Tahiti, for example, has an average of between 1,250 feet and 1,400 foot ahead, which is approximately 5 times that height of Swan Lake. So with 5 times the height, Tahiti takes one-fifth less water, because power is a function of flow and head. So with one-fifth the water requirements, the lake can be one-fifth the size, and that's pretty similar to what we have. The basin, the drainage basin at Swan Lake is about 36 square miles, so it's significantly greater than the Tahiti Basin. And as I proposed, or as I mentioned, since Tahiti is so much higher in elevation, it still has twice the capacity in a year than what Swan Lake has. So knowing those characteristics, they're all built into the model. When you move power across the SDI, it either increases the load at the respective facility or decreases it. And that's the balancing lake parts. And so the model will take into consideration loads, and with a certain load and a known inflow sequence or a chosen inflow sequence, that's how the output of the lake will be.
I get that. That sounds right. The other thing that I've always seen in our graphs, that we have a separate plot for Tahiti and a separate plot for Swan.
Yep.
Have you ever considered that, you know, of course, both these are a resource of SEPA, a single plot with the combined resources?
So the way the algorithm works is, if I did not send any power across the SDI, which you'll see this year, on a average year or even a below average year, Tahiti would go up and spill. It wouldn't draft very low, and it would spill. So in order to balance the lakes in the model, you would begin shifting some of the firm power requirements of Ketchikan over to the Tahiti load requirements. And then you would see the Tahiti model begin to draft lower. and you'd have less spill. And you do that iteratively until you have a balance of lakes. So okay. Because if I left all the firm power requirements on Swan, it would go to the draft limit and stay there and never come off the draft limit in the model, because it doesn't have enough capacity to support the firm power requirements in Ketchikan. So once you start shifting some of those firm power requirements over to Tyee, Tyee begins to dip more and Swan starts to come off the draft limit until you get a nice balance. And when you see what that first chart was, the lakes can draft evenly to their draft limits and then fill evenly.
Okay.
So yes, it does take into account both lakes. Putting them on top of each other would be convoluted, and it wouldn't display what everybody is trying to really see, and that is, how close are we going to get to the draft limits? What do we have for guide curve? And in this case, for this year, what do we have for curtailment and sales curves? And we'll get into those here in a little bit.
Thank you.
Section 2.0 of the power sales agreement discusses the current lake level. First, I want to, as part of this section, I discuss the drought that we're currently in. At the last meeting we were at, we were in a D2 severe drought, and June 4th, just recently in the last month or so, we've actually been upgraded to a D3 extreme drought. The drought is interesting because what is a drought in the desert, for example? If there is no rain in the desert and you get no rain, are you in a drought? But in a rainforest, a drought is a deviation from the mean or the average rainfall. And so, yes, we still get over 10 feet of rain a year, and for most areas that would be flooding criteria. But in Southeast Alaska, it's considered a drought, and in particular because we rely on rain and precipitation for our energy needs. So the D3 extreme drought is very relative to the average or the mean precipitation. Continuing on, looking at the six-year history of rain for to date, and this goes back to 2013 all the way up to 2019. This is a really detailed graph. If everybody wants this, you can see it, but I'm going to zoom in on this and kind of just zoom in on January, February, March, April, and May for the last 6 years. And what we can see in 2019 for this year, we are 37% below the five-year average. That is not taking into consideration 2018. That is 2013 through 2018. So 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. That figure, we are currently sitting 37% below average. Looking at what we had in 2018, we are actually slightly above that. So in 2018, we had a year-to-date. This was on up to June 1st, so we've had some rain since then. But as of June 1st, end of May, there was 31.9 inches recorded last year, and this year we had 34.2. So we're about 2 inches ahead this year than last year. But 2 inches isn't really all that much. That might be 1% better. So we're still in this drought. We're still continued in the drought. And we'll get into what NOAA is forecasting. There is no promise that or any enlightenment on recovery or any change to the drought soon. Current lake levels, I think I put this as 1304, it was 2 days ago is when I built this. So today I looked and Swan Lake was pushing 299.9, so I think Swan Lake will probably be at elevation 300. And I haven't checked this morning. Clay, perhaps you have checked. So 1308 this morning. So within a few days, we've gained 3 feet in Tyee. It does recover real quickly. But looking at this kind of closer, last year we built the guide curve. We built it on what we expected. This guide curve was the lowest rain we had seen in 20 years, and it was built on that model. So last year we can see we came down at Tyee. This is the blue. 2018. We came and